also have an unnumbered Senate bill sitting in front of us that I assume it will be introduced in the Senate today, or I'm not sure when. Like, everyone here knows as much about the bill as I do. And it's also my impression that that some of the members of the commission are going to give us their impressions of the bill. Is that correct? Were you under that same impression? If you'd all like to, you could all come and sit at the end of the table with us.
I always like to know what we're on.
Mr. Chairman, are you inviting the administration to the table too?
No.
I see enough of us.
I'm not sure if you know all of us. I'm Sam Cotton, and we have Oral Freeman, Ramona Kelly, George Senior. Please sit down here. I'll Glenn Hacking, Al O.C., Larry Davis, Clem Tillian, and Lisa Rudd. And if you'd like, you can just go ahead and give whatever initial presentation you may have. There may be a question.
Well, speaking as chairman of the commission, let me just briefly comment on what we are troubled with when we as a commission conduct hearings on municipal appropriation matters. Under current law is almost, standards are almost completely absent from current law in respect to appropriations of any cost of city. Of course, we do have the appropriation standards for organized boroughs. The bill itself strengthens the documentation procedure for the initial submission of a petition, and it involves the Department of Community and Regional Affairs at a particularly apropos moment in the incorporation process, which will give the Department of Community and Regional Affairs an opportunity to conduct a hearing of its own to inform local communities on the incorporation process prior to the submission of the petition to the local boundary commission for its public hearing. I'd like to call on my fellow commissioners to comment further on the bill. Thank you.
I think it's a good idea. Establish
the standards and upgrade the limits set by the municipality before they can apply. I realize that's what you're addressing. So, what you've done then is you've repealed 2918.010 and then you've added a new section, 011. This is a matter of structure. I would have suggested that you just repealed 010 and reenacted 010. That's a really pretty minor point.
The last page you mentioned. No. Sorry.
That's really has nothing to do with the substance of the bill, so I probably shouldn't mention it. All these, let's see.
Mr. Chairman, I should point out that the commission has had only this morning to look at the bill, although the substance of it has been before us for quite some time. That is the problems that this bill solves.
Section 85 there says there's a demonstrated need for local government. You thought you were a bill. I shouldn't ask you. How would you view that in your position as chairman? Why do we have cities?
That is a rather generalized standard that draws the commission's attention to the need on a community basis for certain services and functions on the part of a community. We would look for testimony on behalf of petitioners which would support the extension of an operation of services on the local level, such as fire and police protection and land use planning.
So that would be petitioners in order, or people coming forth and writing letters or whatever is struck by law in effect.
Or a very highly developed area that seems apparent that they would need in the farm that it's an area that develops very rapidly in the combination of
Page two, you start out with the 29-18-050, and then it goes on over to page three, and you've added some new sections that are required as a part of the petition. And a couple of these seem a little curious. Number 12 asks for a proposed operating budget through the first full fiscal year of operation. This seems a little much to somebody like myself that really wouldn't know how to go out and prepare a budget and so forth, but as one of the requirements of the petition, is this something you're familiar with too?
Well, to comment on the imposition of such a requirement on petitioners, it would seem that very shortly after incorporation they would have to do this very thing. Normally the petitioners are going to contain that nucleus group that is going to be behind the municipal corporation once it is formed. We think that this section does reach to the question of economic viability of the community as to the amount of funds that they could generate on the local level to support their municipal functions. And it would also incorporate the intergovernmental funds that they may realize as a result of incorporation through the various programs such as the incorporation grant and revenue sharing.
It kind of carries over the same thing that's contained in the standard for incorporation of an organized borough, where one of the things is if the area large and stable enough to support organized borough government, and then in subsection 3 where it talks about whether or not there are the financial resources capable of providing local services. And I think this goes to one of these determinations. You know, when you look at the budget, and that helps you see whether or not they are capable of sustaining the services.
Well, right, and that would, are you referring to page 1, to number 3 there on the numbers, where it mentions that the department shall consider these different economic factors?
This is kind of, I think 12 is an extension of that, really.
That's as it required as part of the petition in the, mm-hmm. First page there.
Would you view it as a function of the Department of Community and Regional Affairs to somehow assist in it, or at least advise in this budget preparation section? There's a community is interested, it demonstrates an interest, the function of the CRA to come in and helping this initial budgeting and analysis?
I
would think so. The department will probably scream if they're understaffed. But yes, I think they definitely have. I think they've done it in the past. So, my point was, it wasn't just the average citizen getting a petition out and have to sit down himself and dream up some sort of a budget. He would have some mess with.
I think we ought to work it in where and show a willingness to tax themselves for the support of some of the facilities.
I think that's an economic viability.
Well, it's not, because if you give a matching grant, the economic viability might very well be the matching grant or the minimum grant. And that's not really what we intend doing. I hope.
That's always a question to be asked.
The wording here says the first full fiscal year of operation, which may include an initial grant that might be qualified for that first year. But what happens the second year when you don't have that?
Well, the way the thing was set up, you get grant every year. It's a minimum. They were talking about a minimum grant on the revenue share.
We can assure joint committees that the Boundary Commission has in every instance explored the question of how much local support petitioners are willing to generate. Without fail, we ask this question, and it figures into our decision on accepting or rejecting a petition.
It would be nice if it was just written right in the petition that, and show a willingness to tax themselves, because somebody shouldn't be organizing if they've got some gimmick to do it without paying any, have neither a sales tax nor a profit tax.
Do you have a comment on that, Mr. McCarthy?
I was just going to comment on the first page section. I'm looking at an old draft of the bill, but I assume it's still paragraph 3, the very last sentence of paragraph 3. There is a statement including the ability of the community to generate local revenue. Ability to generate local revenue, the sales tax, property tax, as Mr. Orsini once suggested, or toll bridge tax, whatever, too.
I have a question.
Ability and willingness. There's a difference between ability and willingness, and a lot of areas have the ability, but they can just turn down.
Well, I'd like to have the willingness. This is why we're not organized where I live. They have an absolute unwillingness to tax themselves anything. They have the ability.
Mr. Chandler.
The willingness.
On page 2, when it, paragraph 6, down on line 22, it makes a requirement of the second-class borough to designate area-wide and non-area-wide powers, and the bill deletes, as you can see, and of powers to be exercised in the area outside cities only. So I assume, after I read that, that you would redefine non-area-wide powers, or you're going
to begin. Just to point to the last page.
Right, but then it says non-area-wide powers, and it's as it's defined there. I don't see that there's any change. It seems like a non-area-wide power would be a power that may be exercised perhaps only in one service area, not necessarily in a city. I mean, there could be service areas outside of the city, can't there?
Mr. Chairman, I must admit that I'm somewhat confused on the purpose of having this in the bill myself. I believe the purpose is to conform the language in the various parts of Title 29. Is that correct?
Mr. McCarthy, did you
have a... I think so.
Yes, that's correct. The old language spoke of the definition in the existing Title 29 talks about in an area outside the local government, and we propose the Department of Law strongly encourages use a new language, non-area-wide power, and to define non-area-wide power.
But your definition of it is what confused me. Why did you say just for those areas outside of cities? Why didn't you say that those services provided in one service area, not necessarily in all the rest of them?
Service area still exists. There's definition for service area. Previously, when you had reference to providing a service outside a local government or municipality, that language is never clearly defined. The new language that we propose, which the Department of Law prefers, better spells out that it is not a service area. It's a third concept. There is service provided within the community, there is service provided on a service area basis, and then there is non-area-wide power, which is defined in this bill. That's still a huge issue.
This really conforms to what we have always used.
Basically,
people
yes.
have always said area-wide, non-area-wide, and they have not been technical enough to say those powers are exercised outside the city. So this really introduces a word that's commonly been used, I think, in the statute, but this phrase has never been present in the statute.
I understand that. We're all here.
Could I ask a question? This says this, by the rules, the request of the governor, at whose behest was this bill prepared?
The Department of Community and Utilities.
Suggestion of Boundary Commission, or?
I'm trying
to find out who's up to what.
Okay. The department, in listening to discussion on revenue sharing, where quite often the statement comes up, it's unfortunate that present law requires only 10 adults and 15 children to constitute what's required for a second-class city. We've heard that over and over and over again in testimony. The Boundary Commission and the staff have long felt, in fact, we were proposing this summer to do a fairly extensive overhaul of the local Boundary Commission regulations to be presented to the local Boundary Commission and then into next year's legislation. Both this committee and the Senate CNRA committee are looking now at a bill that perhaps could provide up to $25,000 to a second-class city as a minimum grant. And the department felt that perhaps now is the time to propose standards for incorporation, and that's the purpose of the bill.
Thank you.
I'd like to respond on this.
I just like to differentiate between a non-area-wide power and a service area. Power may exist throughout, say, Gulf control, Hamilton control. They exist throughout an area outside the city, but they actually have a service area only in a portion of that control area. So the service area concept is a portion of the area-wide power. But,
you can have an area-wide power and exercise it on a service area basis, or you can exercise the power on a service area basis without having the power area wide, and only have that power implemented and authorized in a particular area.
You can exercise a function without having the authority to do that in area.
Well, a service area, for instance, not doing whatever, can vote in, like pilot fire protection, that will be exercised only in that particular service area, without the municipality having to exercise that power either on an area-wide or what commonly referred to as a non-area-wide basis. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
perhaps non-area-wide power should be defined, or 19 should read, non-area-wide power means that a power of an organized borough exercised by the borough throughout the area outside cities only.
The non-area-wide power would be exercised in the total area outside the city, not just one segment of it. If you're talking about one segment only, then you're talking about a service.
Okay. I finally think I got it. Al, you're first.
Yes. Page 2, line 7, B. Could you explain that? I'm not clear on that. Community level organized borough mean unincorporated.
Page 2, line 7.
Yeah. Section B.
Anybody bring his constitution up?
Okay, so we can get one. Minimum number of local government units.
Yeah, they've already turned down North Kenai, where all I wanted was fine. So they have their access to the surface area of the borough. They didn't provide it.
While you're looking at it, I got a question on page 3. I noticed you took out on line 22 through 24, you took out the language concerning the Bureau of Census reports and other information to determine the population. I was curious about that.
Mr. Chairman, that's permissive language as it's written in the existing statute. The department may use this information. We felt it was redundant. The Department of Law felt that there was no need to have that permissive type language. As a matter of course, we may very well use that information, but to cite permissive language in the statute becomes almost a certainty. It doesn't require that we use it. It says we may. There's no reason to have that type of language in the statute. And in fact, I'm sure we probably would use it.
I have a question for Sig on It's on page four, but it's an extension of the bottom of page three where it discusses the decision on municipal incorporation. If the local boundary commission determines that a proposed municipality fails to meet the standards, it shall reject the petition. Now, in rejecting a petition, how do you go about rejecting a petition? Do you write a written opinion, or do you just say you're just rejected, or what do you do?
It'd be rejected by motion, and we follow up by a statement of decision, which is a ministerial responsibility to maintain rationale and written record, the rationale behind the decision.
There's no provision for this, so you really have as much time as you'd like to do that.
This bill would not limit us up in terms of the time frame.
How long does it usually take you to do something like that?
Well, it has taken us, depending on when we get together, a considerable period of time in some instances. In most instances, we try to file our written decision immediately.
There's always a statement on the record.
Yes, we have a taped record of our decisions.
It says formal rationale. Sometimes there is a gap between the verbal full statement and the actual written statement.
Well, you may have guessed, or I'm interested in a certain decision, but it's never been put out. You've never made a written decision, and it's a document that I think would be awful handy to a group wishing to incorporate. And if they can't get something back in writing as to why they weren't able to do what they intended to do, it seems like it's something that the commission could do relatively easily if it meant nothing more than just compiling the tape recorded decision or whatever other information you may have had. I just wonder what your reaction to that would be. For instance, if we statutorily required within a certain number of certain time period of perhaps a written decision.
We wouldn't have any objection whatsoever to inclusion of that language in the statutes.
Would you mind if I ask you now when you think you'll come out with your written decision on the case with the
As a matter of fact, Mr. Chairman, I have it in my briefcase with me to take up the decision of the meeting. And,
well, as you know, I attended the meeting, but I just was, I wanted to see the written report as well.
Certainly, I have to take if you'd like to reflect upon the actualities. But we will be doing it this weekend. The commission has been together how many times since our meeting on the Eagle River? Once. And our meetings tend to be quite hectic, although I and my fellow commissioners acknowledge that the public should have a written statement from us.
Actually, we made a motion, that before we leave, we sit down and we write the written statement, even if we miss 20. That's what usually happens, where we have such a time press that running to planes or ferries or whatever the mode of transportation is in a particular area, and it's hard to get everybody back together again. And the majority of us decided at the last meeting that regardless of our transportation difficulties, we were going to do the decision then.
Oh, that was at Anderson. And you did.
To answer someone's question earlier about that one in a section, line 7 on page 2, that is the existing provision in the Constitution, Article 10, Section 5. The language refers in the Constitution to service areas, and it's been adapted to the same language.
What did you call the provision?
The Article 10, Section 5. Service areas provide special services may be established or may not be established.
I don't know if there's a, it can be serviced with the service area, then it can form a community, is that incorporated? Is that my correct on that?
Service area.
Yes, Section 5 of Article 10 of our Constitution states as follows. Service areas to provide special services within an organized borough may be established, altered, or abolished by the Assembly subject to the provisions of law or charter. A new service area shall not be established if, consistent with the purposes of this article, the new service can be provided by an existing service area, by incorporation as a city, or by annexation to a city. The Assembly may authorize the levying of taxes, charges, or assessments within a service area to finance the special services.
I still want to add in 2 cents to the community within an organized borough may not incorporate as a city if the service to be provided within an area-wide or non-area-wide basis. And the borough, which here in the first one, they say that there's a need for them, and here.
Well, I think this goes to the non-duplication of government functions. Why have a city created if the services could be provided through the regional form of government?
Isn't that the discouragement from creating the city then?
Yeah.
Yes, it discourages a proliferation of governmental units.
Which reaches back, Mr. Chairman, to Section 1 of Article 10, which states, the purpose of this article is to provide for maximum local self-government with a minimum of local government units and to prevent duplication of tax levying jurisdictions. Liberal construction shall be given to the powers of local government units.
Well, now in Willamette Borough, I think, there is communities here that lost to incorporate, but they are getting these services. So then, are you saying that they couldn't incorporate them if this was passed?
I believe that this section would impose a responsibility on the borough assembly to determine whether or not the services could be handled on an area-wide or not basis by the borough.
Well, they are being more or less now.
You don't furnish police on the borough-wide area. So if they wanted a policeman, they'd have to inform them.
It would have to be something like that before they could inform them. The service that isn't now being provided by the borough, then they can incorporate.
Let's say a petition were to be submitted from the Matanuska Susitna Borough to form a city of Willow. If the services sought to be performed on a local level in Willow could be provided or are provided on an area or could be provided on an area-wide or non-area-wide basis by the Matanuska Susitna Borough, then the community may not incorporate.
You say could be. They could extend their area-wide powers to include police. So in Mr. Killian's example.
Yeah, but it wouldn't do it unless they already had, because as of that time they couldn't.
Depends on who interprets it.
No, I don't think it's happening.
You know, the borough can extend its authority to do anything by a vote of the people. You might have an area that wishes to have police protection. The borough doesn't wish to grant the authority borough-wide. At that point, don't you think that would be grounds for incorporation?
Oh, yes. If there were actual determination by the region government,
they wouldn't
want to do it. I think
it would be grounds for incorporation. I mean, in order to satisfy that, then it seems like
you'd require an area-wide vote?
Require an election.
Of the borough?
Well, no, I didn't think I said that.
Well, that's what I thought you said.
No.
I guess the committee's question is that a logical construction on this proposed statutory provision?
So then who is going to determine that this is adequate service?
This is right out, you've been trying to get some forward.
Again, on the same question. Was there a reason for leaving the provision of the service on a service area basis out of this? In other words, it was intentional that it must be area-wide or non-area-wide in order to preclude incorporation? And if
you mention service area, then you contradict what the Constitution says. In other words, the Constitution says that you can't have a service area if the service could be provided by a corporation as a city. So you can't say the opposite of that, which is effectively what you would be doing.
Constitution says you can't have a service area if the city would do it?
That's what the Constitution says.
It's an existing city.
It's an existing city.
No, or by incorporation as a city is also included in the area.
Yeah, it says it by incorporation.
May I just use a hypothetical? If there was a community that wanted to incorporate, in order to prevent that incorporation, or in order to deny that incorporation, it would be necessary for the borough to provide all of the services that possibly a particular area would want in all of the areas outside.
On an area-wide
or if it's non-area-wide, then outside of all the existing cities.
Right.
So that actually it's not. I wouldn't read that then, Al, as really precluding a small community in a large borough from incorporating if they want particular services.
Yeah, in no way does it.
I agree.
Sorry, I just reached that
point. I did the same thing you did. Pat, a good question. I was asked by the sponsor of House Bill 811 to bring that to your attention, too. I don't know if you might have had a chance to look at it. It's a bill relating to 2968010, which deals with annexation and exclusion. I'll just read it. It's just one paragraph. If 10% of the qualified voters of an area proposed by the commission to be annexed or excluded under A of this section, when A is a where the local boundary commission may propose any local government boundary change, and then they have to bring it to the legislature. What the idea behind this is that if 10% of the qualified voters in this area petition for a vote on the question, then the commission shall conduct at its expense an advisory vote on the question, and then when presenting the proposed boundary changes to the legislature, the commission shall also present the advisory vote result. Again, apparently you haven't had a chance to look at House Bill 811. It was just introduced earlier this week.
That would have blocked the annexation of Old Town Cordova. So they were about 90% opposed to the annexation, but then their sewerage was running for the other people's yard.
This calls for only an advisory vote, though. And then when the boundary change is presented to the legislature, then at the same time the advisory vote would also be presented.
And this advisory vote is at state expense?
Yes. Commission shall conduct at its expense.
And the requirement is that we have 10% of what base?
10% of the qualified voters of an area proposed by the commission to be annexed or excluded under A of this section, which is, of course, the first section dealing with annexation and exclusion. Apparently some would think that wouldn't be valuable information, especially since it would only be an advisory vote. It certainly isn't binding. I guess my question to you is, do you think it would even be worth it to do that?
About an annexation or exclusion proposed by the local boundary commission.
That's yes. Well, now that's after it's been proposed by the city, of course, but when it says proposed by the Boundary Commission, as proposed to the legislature by the Boundary Commission in the report that we get on, for instance, we've got three or four Boundary Commission proposals right now that are going to become effective unless the legislature acts in a negative fashion real soon.
Like, too late. 25 days. It would have to be pretty unanimous to get through that.
Well, now, a couple of them weren't introduced until there were three, I think, on the 12th of January and one on the 19th. Like the city of Anderson wasn't proposed until the 19th. So there's 45 days after that they have.
I would wonder, first of all, whether this would be workable, because it takes time to schedule and conduct an election to canvass for results.
Well, I know where it came from. I don't think, it came from Kenai's attempt to annex the industrial section north of Kenai to add to their tax base, and they excluded most of the people's residences and would have, in effect, reached out and taken the tax base of another area. And the panic in that area was what prompted this thing. Because even if they'd included only two people, it would have been a unanimous vote against that access.
So what they did was they went and drew a bunch of lines that excluded all the people and just took in the
profit. They went, well, the thing was, it didn't even come out crooked on a map, because they just followed a line up, and turned out in the inlet, and the people lived on one side of the road following the whole section line. And the taxable property was on one side, the people on the other, and they just ran right up that road. And you look at the map, and it looks reasonable. If you know the country, it isn't.
Well, what has happened with that?
Well, I think in fear of their life, the city council did through it.
What's the name of that place? Is there a name? Nikiski?
Yeah, the Nikiski Industrial Area, And Kenai's in tough financial shape. They'd love to have reached up for it. But that's not anywhere near as much of a gerrymander as Haynes reaching all the way down to Excursion Inlet to grab that cannery. And the Boundary Commission did that. Not you, but the other Boundary Commission. And that was an absolute gerrymander. They ran, 40 miles down the coast and went around the corner to get the cannery to help their tax base. That's kind of, it's a little raw. Your predecessors did it. The cannery's now paying.
Happened to be there.
Yeah, the cannery just happened to be there. They said they were just after the timber. So.
Of course, the cannery may have the last lap, and maybe some families in there will have to provide education, and the borough will be strapped.
When Brendel was talking about doing that just for revamps, just put 10 children in the area, make them start a school, and then move the kids out and let it close, and every so often do it.
Well, did you have any conclusive remarks that you wanted to make about this bill, this House Bill 811?
I think we deserve a very careful examination before
an act in present form. Well, perhaps any later reflections you may want to send to the committee. We would appreciate it. Mr. Orsini.
Speaking of bills that pertain to boundary commissions, there is another one in the Senate regarding exclusion. And it would require that after you examine the petition to be excluded from an existing borough, that not only there be a vote of the people who wish to be excluded, assuming all of it, but also a vote, an affirmative vote of the people in the area, outside the area to be excluded would also be required. You have to have a double affirmative vote. In the regulations, you now may do that, and this would make it mandatory that this is people. Do you have any feelings on that?
Well, I think it's a good idea if you're going to have that kind of vote, to have it not only in the area that wishes to be excluded as attached, but the area from which it wishes to be excluded vote. I think it has an impact on the entire area, and so everyone should have a vote. What happens?
Well,
I would agree with that.
Yeah, forget it.
Do you feel that that would be any kind of an invasion on your powers of determination? I mean, in some areas, it may, you as a commission may deem that that'd be necessary, and you certainly would have the power to require that, as I understand it.
Well, it would presuppose that we would endorse a detachment petition.
How's that again?
It would presuppose that we would act favorably on a detachment petition. That would be the precursor to such a vote.
Yeah.
But the thing you have to know, that one of the things in favor of passing such legislation is the fact that there will be a boundary commission someday. It probably will. Everything changes. Always write the laws as if your worst enemy was going to administer.
And he usually does.
Generally, we have more confidence in our governmental system.
I have confidence in the governmental system. That's what I was just saying.
Trust the system, not the people. Are there any further questions dealing with the unnumbered Senate bill? Palmer, has this been introduced in the Senate now?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure. The bill, as you see it, is the final draft requested by the governor from the Department of Law. The transmittal letter, we assume, is being typed at this moment. It should hopefully be in the early part of this week.
Well, I guess there's a chance we'll see it, and there's a good chance the Senate committee will see it.
Well, I dare say we'll see it.
Yes, sir. Well, if there aren't any more questions, if anybody has anything they'd like to ask the Boundary Commission, it's a good time to do it. If not, we will adjourn. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for the